Clarence was at your rehearsal, and he said it was unbelievable. He said it just blew his mind. All he could do to keep tears out of his eyes. He was dead serious. You know Clarence Spaulding, our manager?
Yeah. You mean down at just now this morning, down at the thing?
He said it was unreal.
Well, I tell you, it was hard singing before noon. I can tell you that. none of us are very good at that.
Well, so, you got that big raspy voice anyway.
Well, yeah, but... Like I remember one time somebody did an interview with Kris Kristofferson, and he said, I hate singing in the daytime. So I kind of agree with that.
Kristofferson?
Yeah.
How would you know? I was talking to Chris a couple of weeks ago. I said, you're like me, man. It's like Rod Stewart. How do you know when we're hoarse?
Exactly. Exactly.
But Clarence said Paisley came over to him when you guys got done. He goes, man, are they playing the tracks? I said, hell no.
No. Yeah, we did okay for an early morning thing, you know.
Well, how does it feel? Have you ever done an award show?
Never.
Never.
This is the first award show. I mean, not as a band. I mean, we've all individually, you know, some of us, I've presented a few times on the Grammys, and I performed as a solo artist on the Grammys. And then one time I performed, I was the drummer for Guns N' Roses on the American Music Awards.
Really?
Yeah, their drummer was in rehab. And I did that just to shock people.
That's cool.
But as a band, we've never done it. This will be the first time.
Have y'all ever done TV?
Yeah, a little bit. We don't like doing TV. You know, there's too many things that can go wrong. And we just turned down the Super Bowl, as a matter of fact, because it just didn't work very well.
Yeah,
at least not for us. Maybe for some people, maybe. But
you know, we turned down the Super Bowl a few years ago.
Did you?
Too.
Good.
They wanted us to do Boot Scoot and Boogie.
Yeah.
You know, and we're like, y'all, that's, you know, we're kind of a few years by it, and sort of have a different kind of career and whatever. Well, that's what we want. We've got these dancing girls and all this, and we're like,
yeah, see,
you know, to do the Super Bowl is great to tell your Aunt Caddy, but at the same time, I don't think we can afford to do that.
Yeah, well, good for you. I agree with you. No, we just said no thanks. You know, just the wrong setting, wrong context.
Yeah.
But we're looking forward to doing this.
Well, I know everybody in Nashville is really looking forward to y'all being here.
Yeah. It's nice cool. being here.
Is it really? Are you?
Well, it feels like home to me. You know, I'm an East Texas boy. I grew up in a town of 2,300 people. You know, we had one red light and one post office and one sheriff and one Dairy Queen. And, you know, there were 40 people in my graduating class. You know, I've got a lot of ancestors in Tennessee and Arkansas. And so I feel right at home here. I mean, about half the people that we all used to know out in L.A. have moved to Nashville anyway.
Yeah.
You know, a whole bunch of them, including our buddy J.D.
Absolutely.
So,
good guy.
Yeah. So we feel right at home here. All the people that we've talked to today, Glenn and I were just commenting on it. We did a lot of we just got back from London. We did a lot of interviews over there, and we've been doing interviews, and the people we've talked to here today have been more prepared, you know, with their questions and stuff than anybody. It's just been a real pleasant experience. So,
well, it's hard to believe that you'd run into an interview where people aren't real prepared to talk about the Eagles. I mean,
yeah, well, yeah.
What, do you live in a box?
Well, some of them are so young, you know. Some of them are so young, they don't really know the history. And they ask some of those questions that we've been asked, you know, for 35 years now.
Yeah.
People still get me and Glenn mixed up. Somebody called me Glenn 10 minutes ago. That's okay, though.
No, it's not. No, I love the way you said that, but I'm fine with that.
but it's just funny, you know, it's funny. Well, some of them just don't, they don't do their homework, you know. But we're having a good time here.
You from Lubbock, am I right?
No, I'm from Linden.
Oh, Linden, okay.
Other side of the state. I'm from Linden, Texas, is the county seat of Cass County. It's about 40 miles south of Texarkana and 60 miles west of Shreveport, Louisiana.
Yeah, I'm from Shreveport, so I
You are?
Yeah.
I misspent a lot of my youth down there in Bossier City, you know.
I heard you had one of the best club bands.
We were pretty good. We played a lot of clubs.
What kind of stuff were you doing back then?
Well, we were just doing...
A lot of R&B stuff.
R&B stuff, yeah, a lot of R&B stuff. A lot of, they wanted to hear Wilson Pickett and James Brown and Sam and Dave, and that's how I got hoarse.
Well, that's what, you know, I came up on all that old Otis Redding stuff.
Yeah,
and like
yeah.
That. And I knew James Stroud from back then. I mean, he had some, of course, he wound up playing with Jerry Lee and stuff. When the big bands would come in, they'd always get him because he was the only guy we knew that actually could read music, you know, and he was always the producer on the commercial sessions and stuff in Shreveport. But, man, he had some badass R&B bands that played the Strip and Bossier.
Yeah, I wasn't old enough to get in, so you know how you'd take a razor blade and cut up your driver's, you know, alter your driver's license. And the drinking age in Louisiana, of course, was 18. So if you were 15, you could get away with it. And you know, I saw a lot of people come through. Johnny Green and the Green Men.
Oh
them?
Yeah,
those guys.
And Gigi Shin and those guys.
Yeah,
man,
those guys.
There were some big time singers around that part of the world.
Yes,
too.
There were.
So yeah, you had great influences in the club scenes.
Yeah.
What about in Texas? Who turned you on back then? I mean,
well, gosh, we had everything from, you know, where I'm from was kind of the crossroads of musical scene. You know, out west we had Bob Wills and the Texas Playboys and all that kind of stuff, and then we were just south of Arkansas, so there was bluegrass and stuff from the Ozarks and at night, I used to listen to there was a big 50,000-watt station in New Orleans called WNOE.
Oh, sure.
And I heard stuff on that station that I never heard. Ernie Cato and Clarence Frogman Henry and Dr. John and Piano Red and all that stuff. And it was just a different musical world. T-Bone Walker was born in my hometown. Of course, I didn't know him. You know, he was gone long before I was.
I didn't know that.
Scott Joplin, the father of Ragtime, was born in my hometown. I think his father was a sharecropper or worked for the railroad, one or the other. So I had, you know, all kinds of musical influences. You know, Jim Reeves and Nat Stuckey was born in the next town over from me. And I used to listen with my dad. I'd go to work with my dad in the summertime, and we'd listen to KWKH in Shreveport.
Right.
And listen to the Louisiana Hayride.
Hayride, sure.
Yeah.
Well, that's sort of, you know, I was influenced by the root stuff, Hank Sr. and Johnny Horton. They live like two blocks from me. Of course, Billie Jean was married to both of them.
Wow.
So, and Johnny's daughter, Nina Horton, was my age. Our first gig was in their garage.
Wow.
So I got to see Hank's gold records and guitars, you know, that she was married to him before Johnny. And of course, Johnny died a tragic death too, but that's what my father was really into and whatever. In Nashville country, we didn't get the Grand Ole Opry, so I wasn't really, till I started working for him and listening to those truck drivers and getting a little Jones and stuff like that. I was much more into the Texas music scene, you know, the Jerry Jeff and Willie and Waylon and you guys. In 73, I went to SMU for a year. My dad wouldn't get me a Lamborghini, so I had to go back to Louisiana. I couldn't get a date, you know.
Wow.
But I saw you guys at Moody Coliseum my freshman year in college.
Wow.
It would have been 73. And it really, and Ronnie will say the same thing, y'all's music really changed our lives in terms of what we were doing. It was that same, you know, it was a style of songwriting that was very rootsy, very organic, very real. It had a traditional thing about it, but it was like you guys were coming from a place of freedom musically that so inspired us. And I know you've heard it a lot. I can't believe you'd ever get tired of it because it is the truth. I mean,
well,
for
thank
a whole
you.
Era of country musicians.
Well, thank you for that. We've always been, of course, I told you how I grew up. And you know, Timothy grew up in Sacramento, of course, and his dad was in a band, played stand-up bass.
Yeah.
You know, Glenn's from Detroit, but was influenced by country music, you know, especially after he met J.D. Souther, who's from Amarillo. You know, and we were influenced by, you know, we listened to Hank Williams a lot, Sr., and Patsy Cline, and you know, the Dillards had a big influence on us, those boys from Salem, Missouri.
Right.
In the late 60s and early 70s, bluegrass was really a big deal, even in Los Angeles, and the Dillards lived out there. And they were kind of the first long-haired bluegrass group.
Okay.
And we used to go see them all the time, and we'd talk about harmony singing.
Really?
Man alive. That's when Herb Peterson was in the group.
Oh, okay.
And he arranged a lot of their stuff.
Did he really? Well, he was a great banjo player.
Yeah. I vaguely remember that Moody Coliseum gig. We were pretty sloppy back then, but I think we're better now. But
yeah, well, no, from our standpoint, there wasn't anything sloppy about it.
Well, thank
and
you.
Those were those shows too. You know, it was tight. That's a small theater.
Yeah,
and you could really hear. I mean,
well, that's when we had a banjo in the group. You know, that's when Bernie was in the band and playing all those Clarence White bendy licks, you know, we call them. Yeah.
You know, coming out of California back then, I'm so envious can only imagine. I mean, what a great time that must have been. And like, Take It Easy. I mean, was Jackson Brown? Did y'all kind of hang out together? Was he just a songwriter guy over on the side? I know JD and Temption and some of those names that showed up on your album so many times.
Yeah. Well, JD and Glenn knew Jackson. I didn't really know him. I arrived on the scene a little bit later than those guys. You know, they had all, JD and Glenn got there in the late 60s, and I didn't get there until 1970. Kenny Rogers brought me out there.
Really?
Another Texas boy, yeah. He discovered me and my little group, Shiloh, in Dallas playing a club. And he said, I'm looking for group. He was with the First Edition at that time. And,
right.
And he was looking for groups to produce. And so he came and heard us play, and he said, you know, I think I'd like to produce you. So we put all of our stuff in a U-Haul trailer, headed for L.A. in this February of 1970. Didn't know a soul out there except him. And he let us stay at his house for a couple of weeks, and we cut a single, and then went back to Texas, and then went back to L.A. and cut an album. But I met Glenn and J.D. during that time because they were on the, they were a group. They had a group together, and uh-huh. they were on the same little old, we were on a label called Amos Records, which was distributed by Bell Records.
Okay.
And that was Red Steagle and
sure,
and Bruce Henson.
Oh, yeah.
And they were running that label. So that's how I met Glenn and J.D., and they already knew Jackson. And there was a lot of friendship. We all, you know, got to know each other and supported each other, and we'd sit around writing songs. And you know, one thing I learned from Jackson about songwriting is that you could do it in the morning. You know, you didn't have to stay. You didn't have to stay up all night.
You didn't have to be high at 3 o'clock.
No,
I mean, you could do that, but you could do it with a cup of coffee too.
Yeah, but he'd get up and start working on songs at 8 o'clock in the morning. Just you'd hear him. We, you know, JD and Glenn had a little house next door to him, and you could hear him over there. You know, and he'd work till about noon, and then he'd quit. And we went, wow. That's what a concept.
That's good stuff.
So we got some of our work habits from him. And, you know, there was Joni Mitchell and Linda Ronstadt and that whole, you know, and again, the Dillards were out there and the Buffalo Springfield and Poco. And there was a lot going on out there in the late 60s and early 70s. It was a really great scene to be in because it was exciting. You know, this guy, Graham Parsons, had made it cool to do country music.
Yeah.
You know, he's the first guy with long hair to say, look, you know.
Him and Emma Lou got to sing those harmonies and that cool steel stuff. And,
yeah, so, you know, a lot of things came out of that.
It's okay to wear rhinestones.
Yeah, those nudie suits. And that kind of changed everything. And we would go, you know, we would see Poco play, and then we thought they were great. And and Linda, of course, who was still one of the greatest singers, I think. So we just went to school on that. You know, we took all of our roots and our history from different parts of the country, and we just kind of melted it together in L.A. It was a big melting pot, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, we're known as a California band, but none of us are from California except Timothy. He's from Sacramento. But all of us, even the former members, came from different parts of the country. So I always like to say we're a musical mutt, you know.
Well, that's what makes it cool. And you can feel all that, but it works together, and that's really what
I mean, there's R&B, and they call it country rock, but there's some R&B in there, and there's some soul music and some gospel and all the stuff that we brought with us to California.